Hello and welcome to Banfield. He has been a dominating presence on screen and a lightning rod for controversy off screen, and that's been going on for decades. But all of that has been eclipsed by what Alec Baldwin calls the worst thing that ever happened to him. The shooting death of his friend and respected colleague, Helena Hutchins. It happened on the set of the Old West movie, Rust. That was back in October. Baldwin was holding the gun that fired the shot. But in tonight's blockbuster ABC interview with George Stephanopoulos, Alec Baldwin insisted he is not the person responsible for this tragedy. And he says he didn't even pull the trigger on the gun. Now, of course, that gun should not have contained a live round to begin with. There shouldn't have been live rounds on the set at all. There should have been more scrupulous checks of the gun. Just so many shoulds and shouldn'ts in this story, none of them lost on Baldwin, as he made clear tonight in a raw and unguarded and possibly from a legal standpoint, unadvisable interview with ABC. I'm going to play you pieces and bits of that interview in the hour ahead. And each one has been selected very carefully because there's a lot of litigation that could lie ahead, right? There could be criminal aspects and there could be civil. We know at least two and maybe more aspects. Some of the smartest minds in the business right now joining me now. Trent Copeland is a criminal defense attorney and former legal analyst with ABC News. And also with me tonight, Roger Neal, entertainment publicist and PR guru, both of which are very important when it comes to a celebrity who is in the middle of a story like this. Thank you both. Trent Copeland, first to you from the legal standpoint. I know you watched that hour. I know you probably watched differently than a viewer would because there were minefields that he had to walk through, and I think he may have stepped on some.
I don't think there's any question about that, Ashley. And the biggest question is really to his lawyer. Why'd you let him do this? I don't think there's any lawyer worth their salt who would tell their client who is the subject of both a criminal investigation and who's been sued as a result of multi-million-dollar lawsuits as a result of this kind of tragic accident. I don't think you would have that client go on national television and give a free-for-all interview to George Stephanopoulos. I just don't. So, you know, I'm really curious to know what the publicist and the public relations guy in this panel says tonight, but there's no question, Ashley, you're absolutely correct, and you said it at the top. He may have walked himself out of what he may have believed was a criminal liability. But I really think he walked himself into a trap if the district attorney in New Mexico chooses to lay it. And that is that he's locked into something now. He's locked into a statement. He's given inconsistent statements now. And this is the first time that we now have it on record that he, in the first instance, said, I fired the gun. And it was me. And I was practicing a cross-section exercise. And then the next time we hear from him is today when he says, I didn't fire the gun. No lawyer wants to have that inconsistency out there.
Yeah, but there is one lawyer who wants that. That's the plaintiff's lawyer. They want that inconsistency for sure in a civil case. He's got two already on the docket, so there's still more to come. We haven't even had a wrongful death suit filed by the husband of Helena Hutchins yet, and Alec Baldwin talked about that tonight. I'm going to get to that in a minute. But, Trent, to your point, I'm going to read you specifically what Alec Baldwin said that I saw right away as an inconsistency that I think will be mined by an expert litigator, and it had to do with the producer's blame. Okay, and this is what Alec said. There's basically two types of producers who are really in charge of the production, the people who raise the money and the people who spend the money. My consultations and approvals were completely about casting and the script. Okay, I get that. But just a little bit later in George Stephanopoulos's interview production, he went on to talk about that young man, Lane Looper, who walked off the set very upset in protest. And he said that Lane Looper had actually approached him before walking off the set, complaining about the living conditions. Let me read you what was said. Lane said, "We have some issues here. My men need better hotel rooms." There was no mention of safety issues, Alec Baldwin says. "I was about to say to him, let me know what it would be to B&B you guys in a house. I would be happy to contribute to that." The next day they were gone. Okay, Trent, I just saw a guy acting as a producer, not in consultations and script approvals and casting, but in Airbnb-ing crew members who don't like their accommodations and want a producer, line item, to do something about it. So to me, that looked like a bit of an inconsistency. Does it look like it to you?
It is, and I don't think it's a small inconsistency, because the truth of the matter is you're either a above-the-line producer, you're a guy who really just deals with the dollars and cents of a production, or you're a below-the-line producer, that guy who is actually on the ground, on the set, dealing with issues as minute as an Airbnb. And if you are the below-the-line producer, which is what it looks like Alec Baldwin was in this circumstance, it's not hard to imagine that you should also be aware of the very systemic issues related to safety and the safety protocols on the set, in the same way that the armorer would be, in the same way that the prop master would be, in the same way that the assistant director would be. So the idea that he wasn't, and the idea that he was involved in the Airbnb, but he wasn't involved in the issues as fundamental as safety on the set, is shocking to me.
So I want to bring Roger Neal into this conversation. Roger, I am not going to test you on the strengths or weaknesses of a case. I'm also going to bring Steve Wolf in, who's just joining our conversation. He's a weapons expert and a stunt coordinator. But first, Roger, to you. As a PR person, I know you also watch this interview with a very specific eye, much like a potential juror might see it. And that's why I find your advice and counsel very valuable here, particularly on this bite where we see Alec Baldwin breaking down over the strength of bond and the connection that he had with Helena Hutchins. Clearly, he looks to be destroyed by this. And it was very early on in the interview they played this. Let's have a look at it.
She was someone who was loved by everyone who worked with and liked by everyone who worked with and admired.
Roger Neal, I don't care what his detractors will say, and he has lots of political enemies. He's a political guy. That was some real emotion, and that will really hit a lot of viewers hard.
Well, thank you so much, Ashley, for having me back tonight. Listen, you've seen either the most brilliant move in modern day in this kind of a situation, or he's made the biggest mistake of his life and career. I believe him as I'm watching this, I believe what he's saying to me. Look at his face. He's got bags under his eyes. He's lost a lot of sleep. He's distraught. I believe what he's saying to me, as far as how he feels about the woman. Now, saying I didn't pull the trigger. Hopefully, if there's no video from rehearsal, there's no set photographer, okay. But if somebody comes up with something to show something different, then he's just cooked his goose as far as this goes from a PR standpoint. The brilliant move on his part, actually, Ashley, is that people watching this in that area of the state where this happened, those are potential jurors. He's trying to get out ahead of it. I agree with your legal analyst tonight. Big mistake, but this man, I think, could be in his mind fighting for his life here. And so he has to do something. So, you know, Alec Baldwin is very outspoken. So this is not a surprise to me. I would have advised him to do something live, not taped. I would have advised him to wait a little bit and not done it so early. But I think he's scared.
Yeah, well, he has a lot to be scared and worried about. Yeah. This investigation is now going on 2 months. He said he wanted to do this interview to get out ahead of it because he was getting impatient and didn't feel they were going to wrap up before January or February. Okay, Steve Wolf, I'm going to get to you now about something I thought was really critical in this interview, and it was all about the stuff you know most about, how a weapon fires. And let me just preface this moment that I'm going to play from the interview by mentioning that it broke last night that he told George Stephanopoulos he didn't pull the trigger, and most people said, oh, phooey, you can't fire a gun if you don't pull the trigger. But not a lot of people know about antique guns, hair trigger, what it takes to cock a gun before you fire a gun. And I'm going to get you to show that in a moment. But first, I want you to hear what he talked about when he did that cross pull. He pulled it from one side of his body to the other, and how he described to George Stephanopoulos pulling the hammer back and letting it go. Take a look.
No, so then I said to her, now in this scene, I'm going to cock the gun. And I said, do you want to see that? And she said, yes. So I take the gun and I start to cock the gun. I'm not going to pull the trigger. I said, do you see that? She goes, well, just cheat it down and tilt it down a little bit like that. And I cock the gun. I go, can you see that? Can you see that? Can you see that? And she says, and then I let go of the hammer of the gun and the gun goes off. I let go of the hammer of the gun and the gun goes off.
At the moment.
That was the moment the gun went off. Yeah, that was the moment the gun went off.
It wasn't in the script for the trigger to be pulled.
Well, the trigger wasn't pulled. I didn't pull the trigger.
So you never pulled the trigger?
No. I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them. Never. Never. That was the training that I had. You don't point a gun at me and pull the trigger.
Steve Wolf, you're the gun expert. Help me understand how that could be possible.
Well, if you don't mind me demonstrating... this is the same gun that they used. If you pull the hammer back a little bit, it doesn't go forward on its own. If you pull the gun back a little bit more, it doesn't release on its own. If you cock the gun all the way back and take your finger off it, it doesn't release on its own. What causes the hammer to release is when pressure is applied to the trigger. Now, on this gun, if you pre-apply pressure to the trigger with your finger like this, and then pull the hammer back and let it go, it will discharge. So based on the physical realities of this gun, if you had the hammer back and you let it go, the only way it would release is if you simultaneously had pressure on the trigger. So, Steve, could it make sense?
If Alex's description, and pardon me for interrupting, because I think what you just showed is so fascinating and I can see it play out on the stand in a case. I've seen this kind of thing before. I've seen the experts get on the stand like you and talk about the weight that you have to pull, the amount of pounds that you have to apply of pressure to pull a trigger. Do you think it's reasonable then for Alec Baldwin to have perhaps reached across his body, grabbed that gun, perhaps the finger is pre-applying the pressure to the trigger, pulls it across, and then brings that hammer back and then releases
and it
it goes off without... So it's not implausible what Alec Baldwin's saying.
Well, right. It is possible to discharge the gun without pressing the trigger at the moment when you intend for the gun to fire. But it's not possible to fire without having your finger on the trigger. So you can pre-pull the trigger and then pull the hammer back and then release the hammer and the gun will discharge. But this violates saying, you know, I didn't touch the trigger. I didn't have my finger on the trigger. Your finger has to be on the trigger in order for this to discharge, but you don't have to press the trigger at the moment of discharge. So your options to discharge the gun, pull it back and fire it. But let me ask you this. Take a look at my finger right here. I'm going to put my finger on the gun in the trigger hole. Now I want you to tell me, did I or did I not press the trigger?
Well, I can't tell.
I'll do it again. I'm going to put my finger on the trigger. Okay. Did I press it?
It's eclipsed. I mean, I can see your knuckle, but I can't see if your finger's actually depressing the trigger.
Right. Well, I did. And so if you, in a close-up right here, you know, where the gun is full screen on TV, you can't tell if I pressed that trigger, then how on earth did Dave Halls be able to say that he didn't press the trigger from 20 feet away? When I'm holding it right here in front of you, pressing the trigger,
you make a brilliant point. Trent, right. I don't know. In Magic TV land, the viewers right now can see all four of us, and we're all looking straight at inanimate cameras. It's very unnatural. Trent, do you have a monitor where you could see what Steve Wolf was just doing?
I do. I can see what Steve's doing. And again, it doesn't appear to me that, you know, Steve is pulling the trigger. So I'm not really entirely certain whether the cinematographer, Ms. Hutchins, who was killed, or the director, could have seen whether or not Alec Baldwin had his finger on the trigger as well. But the truth is, you know, Alec Baldwin didn't say he didn't have his finger on the trigger. He says he didn't pull the trigger. And that's a distinction. And that may be just the tiny bit of daylight that he has to establish that although he may have had his finger on the trigger, he may have been practicing this cross pull, this cross section action for rehearsal. He may have been doing those things, but he never pulled the trigger, though he had his finger on the trigger. And whether or not that results in a determination by the district attorney who's still investigating this as to whether or not this is willful, wanton, careless disregard, that's really the standard. And the question will be, is that enough? To have your finger on a trigger but not pull that trigger. on a gun that you did not believe had a live weapon in it, had a live ammunition in it, a live bullet, is that enough to establish wanton, willful recklessness? I'm not sure it is. He may, Ashley, just escape liability here, criminal liability, because of a real distinct reading of the statute.
Yeah, and I think what Steve just showed us is just so fascinating. Steve, really quickly, tell me what you're going to say. I got to get a break in.
I was just going to say, when I say put his finger on the trigger being necessary, that does include pressure applied to the trigger. So if you pre-apply the slightest amount of pressure to the trigger and then pull the hammer back and release it, it will fire. If you simply have your finger resting on it and pull it back and release it, nothing happens. So the trigger was depressed.
But that distinction is very important because he is doing a cross pull. And if he's pulling it out and his finger is inadvertently on the trigger doing that pre-pressure, he might not think he's actually pulling the trigger because he hasn't cocked it yet. So I find that absolutely fascinating, as is pretty much everything you say, Steve Wolf, and Trent Copeland and Roger Neal. So I'm going to ask the three of you if you could hold on for a moment while I fit in a quick break, because after the break, there was a moment in this interview with George Stephanopoulos where my jaw dropped. And Alec Baldwin went right to his critics who say, all those people who say to me, you idiot, how could you ever point a gun at someone? Well, he had a hell of an answer. You're going to get it next. Back now with my special guests tonight, Steve Wolf, who is a weapons expert, knows more, I think, than anyone I've seen talking about this story on television ever since this incident happened. And I'm so glad you're with us tonight. I had a full epiphany just about 10 minutes ago with what you showed us, Steve. Thank you for that. Trent Copeland is also with us, and that's the defense attorney at your own peril you disagree with, because there is nobody smarter than that. And then also Roger Neal is a PR guru, entertainment publicist. He knows his stuff because he's had clients like Jessica Simpson and Brittany Murphy, and those are what you call the big leagues. Okay, so all-star panel here. You all heard from the moment this story broke how the camps weighed in, the pro-Baldwins and the anti-Baldwins and the real meanies, right? Mm-hmm. Baldwin addressed that. He seemed to really clench his teeth about the negative press and the aggro folks that have weighed in and been really mean. But what was really interesting was how he responded to that question of those who called him an idiot over and over again for having pointed a gun at an actual person. And if you don't understand why that happened, Alec Baldwin was all too pleased to explain that to George Stephanopoulos. Here's how he did it.
People said to me, I got countless people online saying, you idiot, you never point a gun at someone. Well, unless you're told it's empty and it's the director of photography who's instructing you on the angle for a shot we're going to do. And she and I had this thing in common where we both thought it was empty and wasn't. And that's not her responsibility. That's not my responsibility. Whose responsibility is remains to be seen. But
I do. There are some who say you're never supposed to point a gun at anyone on a set, no matter what.
Unless the person is the cinematographer who's directing me where to point the gun for her camera angle. That's exactly what happened.
Ha, now that is some strong stuff. Steve Wolf, I've heard differing philosophies about that on a set, meaning you get the shot set up and then you wait for the physical human being who is the cinematographer to step away from the camera before you do that. But at the same time, I understood what Alec was saying. Helena was instructing him in doing something called marking the shot, meaning turn your wrist a little more. We can't see the gun well enough. Bring it down slightly and over to the left. There, that's where the light catches it. Where is any of that unfair or wrong or, I dare say, makes him liable?
Well, one thing he said that he and Helena both believed that the gun was empty. Well, all guns are always loaded. That is the first rule of gun safety. Unless you personally have verified that the gun is empty and while the gun still remains in your hand. So the only reason he believes it's empty is because Dave Halls yelled out it's empty, and Dave Halls is not the armorer and has no authority to speak to that issue. Now, Alec also spoke about previous experiences that he'd had with proper armorers where if he messes with the gun, does anything to it, they come back and recheck it because they say that the actor shouldn't be the last line of defense against the crew being injured. And obviously he didn't see any of that behavior coming from Ms. Reed. So he knew, based on his ability to compare previous expert armorers' behavior with her behavior, that she didn't know how to do this job properly. And not only was she not there, but he's relying on Dave Halls, who's not an armorer, in doing something that could easily take a life. So why would you rely on a first AD with a, you know, questionable safety history to tell you that a gun is empty before you point at another human being? It makes no sense to me.
Well, it's interesting you should ask that, because George Stephanopoulos, you know, posed that same question in a different kind of way. And it was real succinct and real clear. And it was, why didn't you, Alec Baldwin, you check the gun? Here, I want to play it for you and ask you a little bit on the other side about it. Take a peek.
What is the actor's responsibility? The actor's responsibility is to do what the prop armorer tells him to do.
Okay, so Trent Copeland, I want to bring you in on that as a legal question, because, again, I believe that we are going to see Alec Baldwin on a stand. Whether it's a criminal procedure or whether it's civil procedure, I think he's going to take the stand, and he's going to have to answer these questions, and they're going to be harder. I love George Stephanopoulos, but they're going to be strategic questions that will hem him in. He said, I do what the armorer says. But I've also heard that when you're trained to be an actor who handles weapons, you do have to check your weapon.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there, Ashley. I'm not so sure that I agree with our firearm expert that Alec Baldwin had an affirmative duty on a set where there wasn't supposed to be a live round. Look, I think everyone would agree that on sets, there just simply aren't live bullets. Live bullets have no place, but with live firearms, have no place on a movie set. And Alec Baldwin should have known, and I'm speaking more as a defense lawyer now, he really could have known or should have known that that gun was not loaded. It was what's referred to on a movie set as a cold weapon. And he should have the ability and the presumption that the people around him whose job it is, whether it's the assistant director, the prop master, or whether it's the armorer, that those people are going to be there and do their jobs. They're not just there as potted plants. They're there specifically to assure that the weapons are safe. And whether or not Alec Baldwin, the actor, has the ability to presume those things is a very different question than Alec Baldwin, the producer, who has the right to presume that those things are accurate. So it could be that Alec Baldwin, the actor, did everything in his power to make sure that he was doing the things that would have made that set safe. But Alec Baldwin, the producer, did not do enough to make that set safe. And so the law doesn't just presume what you knew. The law also takes into account what you should have known. And if Alec Baldwin should have known that that set was not safe and there are people who were not properly doing their jobs, there were people who were walking off that set, and we do know that that's the case, then Alec Baldwin, the producer, may still be liable either criminally and certainly civilly.
You know, Trent Copeland, you know better than to pull all that legalese with me and say things like potted plant. I know you have a lot to do tonight. So, Trent, I'm going to let you go and thank you profusely and demand that you show up again on this program. Thank you, Trent.
My pleasure.
Steve Wolf, I'm not going to let you go so quickly. And Roger Neal, I have another question for you after the break. And there is that looming big, big question, and it was asked and answered, and you are going to hear it. What about the guilt factor? What about the responsibility factor? And what about blame? And Alec Baldwin had an answer for all of it. You'll hear it in a moment. When there's a big story and someone dies and there's an investigation and there are civil suits and one of the people at the center of it all is a big, shiny star, you can bet that everybody's going to be talking, but the last person who should be talking is that big, shiny star, or really anybody in that concentric circle around him or her. But yet Alec Baldwin decided tonight to give one of those big ABC glossy primetime interviews to George Stephanopoulos. George is a great interviewer, and Alec answered all of his questions. But the things that were said may not have been too helpful to his case, and maybe they were. In particular, there's someone who I know watched with a discerning eye, and that is one Mark Garagos, who is the defense attorney to the stars. And when I say that, here are just a few of his clients: Scott Peterson, Michael Jackson, Chris Brown, Winona Ryder, and many, many more. So I want to put you in the shoes of being the defense attorney for Alec Baldwin, Mark Garagos, after you saw that hour. And how do you feel right now?
I'm not happy. I'm not happy at all. Look, his emotion, he was obviously emotional. He was, it appeared by all accounts, albeit he's an actor, that it was genuine and that it was authentic. The problem is, this does not move the ball forward in any way, shape, or form. From a criminal defense standpoint, the idea of I'm not pulling the trigger, but I didn't check it, and it's somebody else's fault, that doesn't fly. We're not talking about an intentional act. We're talking about a negligent act. You've already got other people, notably George Clooney, saying that it's insanity. If you're going to say, I mean, there's a subtle amount of this that is victim blaming, meaning you're saying I was doing what the cinematographer was telling me. Well, the cinematographer certainly didn't tell you not to check the gun, so that doesn't help. And then you've already admitted that you pulled it back or you cocked the gun and
the hammer.
All that does is get the hammer. All that does is get you into trouble with civil liability. So, you know, it might make you feel better. And this is the problem with people who are high profile and famous, as a distinguished from infamous. If you are famous and you have people around you who are telling you whatever you want to hear, and you're in the midst of this storm, somebody needs to step up and just say, sit down, shut up, and let me handle this. Because this, while it might make you feel better and people may, it may galvanize the very polarized positions, it doesn't do you any good whatsoever in either a criminal determination by a prosecutor or a civil determination by the lawyers who are coming after you in a feeding frenzy.
I think I know almost to the bite which one you're talking about, because George really, you know, summed it up by saying, do you feel any guilt when it comes to what has happened? Now, I was astounded at the answer, and certainly all the promos left that big, long pause. Well, it turned out there wasn't a big, long pause, and there was a very specific and clear answer. He didn't even need to think it through. He knew exactly how he felt about that question, and here it is.
No, no. I feel that there is, someone is responsible for what happened, and I can't say who that is, but I know it's not me. I mean, I honest to God, if I felt that I was responsible, I might have killed myself if I thought I was responsible.
Okay, back with Roger Neal, I mean, and also with Steve Wolf. They're joining you, Mark Garagos. So listen, it's one thing to be emphatic. This is not my problem. I did not do this. I am not to blame. But then there is also the image that that creates. And Roger, I know that you've watched the silos that have created on either side of the Baldwin story. Yeah. And I don't know that they're not less entrenched tonight.
The way he answered that question, he just damaged himself real good. I mean, if you had believed what he said earlier, when he answered this question, he just blew it. He doesn't know when to stop talking is the problem. And, you know, a good PR person coordinates with someone like Mark, and you work together as a team when you have somebody like this that you're representing. But when you have somebody who's sort of a loose cannon, it's hard, really hard to get them under control because he's afraid. And you could just look and tell he's afraid of what's coming. So he's trying to clear himself ahead of time. But I think he's going to get himself, publicity-wise, he's shattering his image even worse than it was. So I think his best thing would be just to shut up and let other people handle this for him.
And one last comment from you, Steve Wolf, before you go about, listen, what you said off the top of the show, and Mark Garagos, I think you might have missed it, but Steve gave a remarkable demonstration of just how easy it actually could be to make Alec Baldwin's argument plausible that he didn't pull the trigger, or at least didn't think he pulled the trigger. But Steve, when it comes right down to all the brass tacks and an actual appearance on a stand in court, when people like you come in and you're the experts, do you think that what he said tonight is going to hold water?
I don't think so. I think that in his effort to try to win the court of public opinion, he may have lost the court of judicial oversight. and put himself in a worse bind. And even if it's just an accident, even if you think other people, you know, had responsibility in this, to not feel some sense of guilt about having taken a life, even if accidentally, is unconscionable to me. I can't imagine being in his position and not feeling tremendous remorse and guilt about what happened, even if you had only a small
part of your responsibility. Ashley, can I jump in? Because that's a brilliant observation. As I'm watching it, and you know the word is guilt that's going to come up, you could make the pivot. You could make the pivot and say, in a legal sense, no. However, do I feel guilty? Do I feel morally and ethically responsible? Yes, own it. I mean, if that's really, if you're being authentic, that's where you go. You don't go into this, you know, trying to parse it and come up with this. It wasn't me. It was somebody else. I'm not going to say who. That, you lose everybody when you do that.
That's right.
I mean, it's a fascinating discussion. It is not over yet. I look at these pictures of this beautiful cinematographer who had such a blossoming career ahead of her. Not a negative word said about her personally or professionally. And then, of course, there is the husband and the 9-year-old son. Alec Baldwin speaking to that son, no longer having a mom. And as Alec Baldwin said, I have 6 young children and they light up with their mother, not so much with me. Roger Neal, thank you. Steve Wolf, thank you. I look forward to speaking to both of you again. Mark Garagos, you don't get off so easy because after the break, we have an actor who is very used to gunplay on a set. He's joining us and he is not buying anything coming from Alec Baldwin. You're going to hear why. And then I'm going to press them on it, too. And you're also going to hear Alec Baldwin talk about just how thin they were all stretched on that set. We are breaking down that bombshell interview that just took place between Alec Baldwin and George Stephanopoulos. Alec Baldwin has a lot of fans, a lot of supporters, but no shortage of folks who place him directly in those who are culpable for what happened down in New Mexico on that set of the movie Rust. Attorney Mark Garagos is still with me, and now joining us is actor, musician, and filmmaker John Schneider, who will always be Beau Duke to me. But John, you and I were talking the other night, and it was right at the end of the show, and you sort of added in, I have something to say about Alec Baldwin, and we didn't really get to dig into that. And then, lo and behold, there's a big interview tonight, so I thought you'd be a good guest to bring back. I know that you are not a fan of Alec Baldwin. You have made no secret of it. But I just wanted to get, you know, your thoughts without, you know, the clock ticking about the situation that Alec Baldwin finds himself in.
All I saw this evening, we've been at an event. All I saw this evening was what you just showed. And for this man to say that he has no remorse, that someone is to blame, but it's certainly not me. Did I hear him right? Is that what he said?
Guilt. No, he says, I'm not guilty.
He
said,
no guilt.
Do you have guilt? Yeah, he said, I'm not the one who's responsible. Someone's responsible, he said, not me.
This just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. So did a gun magically, and by the way, I have one here. It's an odd little gun. Did a bullet somehow magically jump into the chamber? Here's a bullet. The bullet can't just magic, it's a 22, can't just magically jump into there. And then did the gun magically close itself? Now, by the way, no bullet. Okay. So what we're told we need to believe is then this was a single action weapon, just as the one that Alec didn't pull the trigger on. The gun loaded and fired itself. So in order to fire this gun, you need to cock it like a single action Colt. This was a copy of a single action Colt, as I understand it, the one that Alec used. And then you have to pull the trigger. There are a series of actions that must take place in order for a projectile to come out of the end of a gun. And the reason I was so enraged last night is that it appears that once again, people are going to be trying to say that this is the weapon's fault, not the person who fired it. Am I incorrect in assuming that?
No, I think you bring up a good point, because Steve Wolf gave us a demonstration of the antique gun in which he showed how it possibly, you know, might have happened. I actually want to play another piece of this interview for you both. It has to do with the question that George Stephanopoulos asked, you know, was the armorer, was she up for this job? She was young and inexperienced. She'd only done one major film right beforehand. And it was an interesting question that Alec Baldwin...
She grew up in a family of an armorer, though. She's
true,
the, she's
but
the daughter
she was
of an
the head armorer,
armorer, which probably means she's
yep.
excellent.
And the question that was given to him was she up for the job? And here's how Alec Baldwin answered it. Take a look.
Okay.
No, I assume that everyone who's shooting a lower-budget film is stretched, myself included. And I got no complaints from her or the prop department. I'm not sitting there when I'm getting dressed and ready to go to a scene saying, oh, my God, the prop woman seemed very harried today.
Mark Garagos, real quickly, jump in on that. Stretch too thin. Is that going to be a defense?
Look, there's a couple of problems here, and this is what somebody should have sat him down and explained to him. Why did you insist on being an executive producer credit? Why did you want to be called an executive producer? That comes with certain responsibilities. Are you aware of that? Are you aware that there were people that were complaining about safety on the set? Are you aware that people were complaining that they were stretched too thin? Are you aware it's a low-budget film, and did you take any extra precautions because of that? All of those things are going to be asked. This is, to my mind, this is precisely why you never want to talk while you're in the crosshairs, and pun intended. But to John's right. point, you know, what you found almost universally is whether you're on John's side of the spectrum or George Clooney's side of the spectrum, almost every actor has come out and where they've talked about it have said this is insane. And this is doubling down on the insanity. By the way, I want to compliment John. He used the word that somebody should have taught Alec Baldwin, which is remorse. He should have said, do I feel guilty that I'm guilty? Not in a legal sense. Do I have an overwhelming sense of remorse? It's crippling. That's all you have to say. You don't have to say, I'm not guilty,
absolutely.
And it's somebody
absolutely.
Else's fault. It's just, I mean, it's like PR 101 disaster.
It's interesting, you know, and maybe he's looking back on this and wishing, gosh, I wish I'd worded that differently, as many people do. But when we come back after the break, real quickly, John, I just want to get this in here. The big question that, you know, Hannah Gutierrez's lawyers put out on television, ooh, this is sabotage. Somebody must have intentionally wanted this to happen. Well, Alec Baldwin answered that, and you know what? The prosecutor has also answered that, too. When we come back after the break, we're going to have Alec Baldwin's version of that and then get both of you to weigh in on that. We're back right after this.
Do you believe the set was sabotaged?
Well, I didn't believe that Helena was shot and found out that she was shot with a live bullet. So there are things that I never imagined could happen, which turned out to have happened. Do I believe that the set was sabotaged? No, because I can't imagine how that would have been affected. I don't know how somebody would have done that.
Back now with Mark Garagos and John Schneider. So, John, the whole notion of the sabotage seems to be quickly going away. It's not just Alec Baldwin who doesn't believe it. It's also the prosecutor who says there's no evidence of that. It just sounds like it's real lousy lawyering on TV by Hannah's lawyers. But do you have any feeling one way or the other about that even being an issue?
Well, no, and I'm actually glad that Alec said that. I think that's a point for him. It's still, it comes down to at least two, if not three people did not check a firearm. Simple. Also, remember, this was during lunch, during the lunch hour. If you are called in for a rehearsal during lunch, it's very unusual. And if you are, it means you had to wolf down your food or put down your sandwich. And Alec is not known as the most compliant actor in the world. So if he was called in halfway through lunch, which is when this supposedly happened, then he was probably not in the best of moods anyway. And I hope that the prosecutor considers that.
Yeah, I'll have to check that, because I feel like at some reports it said this was after lunch, and there's all this talk about the guns at some point being out on a tray and unsupervised. But I think those facts still have to get solidified. Mark Garagos, quickly now on the civil. I agree. You know what? If you're going to put it to your own head, you'll check it, right? If the scene calls for you to put it to your head.
Remember that? Well, you're too young. You don't remember that.
No, I do. I do remember that one. And I think he was playing. It wasn't even part of a scene. He was just fooling around.
He was playing,
and
it was a blank. In that instance, it was a blank. And it was a tragic bit of stupidity. But he suffered from it, not this beautiful woman.
Right. And it should have been, a cautionary tale for everyone. Okay. Mark Garagos, to the civil actions, because Alec Baldwin had a lot to say about the line of suits that's coming. And he was pretty upset about the fact that Serge Svetnoy, who's one of the electricians, has filed his wrongful death suit, as has another employee on this set, before the widower, the husband of Helena Hutchins, has had a chance to file a wrongful death. Talk to me about the significance of the order in which these suits are filed.
Meaningless, and that's something he should have been counseled. I agree with John also that his response to the, was this intentionally sabotaged. His answer was good there. I'm not going to take issue with it. The reason I was chuckling was not over anything other than John's kind of very diplomatic recounting of Alex apparently doesn't like to miss his meals and gets very upset. So I apologize for that. But, John, it was pretty well done.
Civil, I've always understood that the first person to the trough gets paid out first in the civil litigation if there's multiple suits. That's not going to be a factor here?
No. You've got other kinds of legal situations where first person may get priority in terms of the lead lawyer or things of that nature. But no, not in a civil suit. There are all of these suits at some point are going to be combined unless they're separately in New Mexico and California. But you may even find that they get combined even then, depending on how many of them there are. So first in line doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
I've got about 10 seconds left. You always do that. As I'm saying goodbye, you bring up another topic. Can we talk about it on another night? Mark Garagos.
Yeah, that's a tease. Thank you, Ashley.
This is about justice. This is about justice.
I'm down to 2 seconds, guys. Okay, Mark Garagos, John Schneider, I want to have you both back because I adore you to bits. Thank you both.
Thank you so very much. You take care.
You too. And thank you all. We'll see you back here tomorrow night for Banfield.